Someplace else there.
Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures.
We should be national.
Tuesday, June 18th.
Yeah.
And I think I'm hearing observations about the size of the audience. There are maybe two empty seats if someone's standing and needs to sit. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2270A.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, House Bill 2270A increases the tax rate on cigarette distributions. It dedicates those tax, the revenue from that additional tax to the state's medical assistance program and various programs addressing tobacco and nicotine use, health issues related to that, and also mental health issues. It amends expense payment provisions in cigarette tax administration and enforcement. It establishes the floor tax related to this tax increase. It adds to statute definitions of a definition of inhalant delivery systems for the purpose of taxing those tobacco products. It imposes a tax on such systems. It dedicates the taxes again to medical and mental health issues related to the use. There are two amendments. So the A version of the bill removes this cap on the cigar tax and makes the sale of cigarettes and packages with fewer than 20 illegal. The amendments are slightly different, so I'll discuss those next. This applies to reporting periods beginning on or after January 2021, and this will be submitted to voters for approval or rejection. The Dash 15 amendment disallows local taxation, and so this would be a kind of a full local preemption now for tobacco and inhalants. And the Dash 18 amendment reinstates the cigar cap currently in statute, but at a higher level of $1 per cigar, and it removes the minimum prices related to cigars from this bill. There were a few questions during yesterday's public hearing, and I believe OHA has uploaded to Oldis some documents to deal with those e-cigarette questions.
Thank you for that explanation. Are there questions? Seems like we're ready for a motion.
Madam Co-Chair, I would move the Dash A15s to House Bill 2270.
Senator Hass moves the Dash A15 amendments adopted into House Bill 2270A. Discussion on that amendment, A15. Objections? Discussion or objection?
I'm objecting.
Thank you. Motion passes.
Madam Co-Chair, I would move the A16s in House Bill 2270. Oh, it looks like a 6 on this. I'm terribly sorry. Madam Co-Chair, I would move the Dash 18s into House Bill 2270.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senator Hass moves the Dash A18 amendments adopted into House Bill 2270. Discussion. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And while I'll be voting for this to actually limit the damage on cigar sales, last time we did this, took off the 50-cent cap. Cigar sales decreased in Oregon or shifted somewhere else, and I expect the same thing to happen.
Any other discussion?
Madam Co-Chair.
We have moved. We're all present.
A15. Okay. Cigar.
Dash A18. That's the motion.
Okay.
Let's wait just a moment.
We haven't voted yet.
Oh, okay.
We voted 15. So, and if the good senator has said something, I could have killed it right here.
Okay, we've had time for discussion on Dash A18. Are there objections to Dash A18? Motion passes.
Madam Co-Chair, I move House Bill 2270A as amended to the floor of the Oregon House and the Oregon Senate.
Mr. Co-Chair, thank you. Senator Hass moves House Bill 2270A as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Any discussion? Yes, Representative Finley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I believe that this is an excessive tax hike. I think we have some questionable data on the amount of leakage and the elasticity of the total numbers. And I think the revenue impacts are greatly overprojected. If we lose all of the Oregon or all of the Washington people coming to Oregon to buy cigarettes, if we have our tax mirror to them, they're going to stop coming now. And I think that's a huge number. I think if we drop this number down by half, we'd have increased revenue. And I think some of it's pretty regressive on some of the studies we've shown by many different witnesses throughout this was the large majority of the people are quitting smoking except for lower income minorities. And this seems like a little aggressive tax towards those folks who can least afford it. So I'm opposed to this measure. Thank you.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, colleagues, and to the public. I'll be voting yes today on House Bill 2270 as amended, and there's several reasons for that. In District 57, for multiple years, I've advocated for additional funding for mental health needs in the state of Oregon, and to be consistent and not have conflict in that message, I need to support this effort. In my district, there's no greater need for those who are vulnerable than mental health assistance, and this is an opportunity to step up and to move in that direction. Second, I'll be supporting this bill for a reason that may be offensive to some, and I apologize if it is, but it's a message I've shared throughout my district, and that is folks who tend to use tobacco products, in my view, have a tendency to also use the Oregon Health Authority and the services they provide. And if they're going to be utilizing those services, this is a methodology for them to pay for the use that they're benefiting from. And I don't mean to be offensive on that, but I think citizens in Oregon believe that tobacco does cause harm, and folks on the Oregon Health Authority need to use services to assist as a result of those personal choices. I do have a concern about the regressive nature of what we're looking at today, but that'll be an issue for the voters of Oregon to decide, which brings me to my third reason for supporting House Bill 2270 as amended. And that is, with this being a referral to the voters of Oregon, they will determine if this is an investment that they want to see happen. And when we hear that message, we can then adjust. And so, Madam Chair, Co-Chair, thank you for allowing me to share those thoughts.
Your comments. Yes, Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The good news, as the good representative said, is it's a referral to the people, so they get their opportunity to vote. I would hope, regardless of what the outcome is that we don't use the typical Oregon way excuse we use around here, and that is change the will of the voters after they voted, which we have accommodated. But two other challenges I just need to put on the record so that it's there. The first thing is you can't bind a future legislature. So some of the statutory things in here that say things are dedicated, so on and so forth, can easily be changed by a future legislature. And of course, it's not good to bind a future legislator. You should have review of even the Oregon Health Authority other than ways and means, since I think education is going to be second fiddle to healthcare in the budget process as we go forward. And then a more fundamental issue, and that is I fully agree, having been a chief co-sponsor of an expenditure increase of almost $250 million going towards mental health, only to have it liquidated in front of us. Dedicating the funds is good, but there seems to be a habit of those dedicated funds disappearing and not being spent on sensation activities. And I would hope that if the people do pass this, as the good representative from Eastern Oregon said, that we actually use it on mental health and we actually use it on sensation activities instead of what we typically do, and it gets dribbled away into general fund and administrative costs, which has been the failure of the cigarette tax today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Rushkie.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I've already made my comment about cigars, but as far as vaping and cigarettes, I'm disappointed that we're continue to treat these two inequitably, I guess. I think we're giving favoritism to one over the other. I'd much rather find a way that we could measure how much a cigarette contains tobacco and how much vaping contains tobacco and tax them equally. This bill does not do that. Second of all, as far as vaping goes, if we think this is now going to slow vaping for those underage, we're kidding ourselves. This business is going underground. Third, I just think that us raising to parity with Washington on cigarette taxes is a mistake. I think right now we have a great thing going in Oregon in that we have Washingtonians subsidizing the Oregon Health Plan. And that's going to stop. So the dramatic drop in cigarette usage is not necessarily going to be by Oregonians stopping buying, but it's going to be from those coming, at least in my district, from California to purchase, and all the way from Astoria to Walla Walla, no longer purchasing cigarettes across the Columbia. So I just think that not a good bill. I think we could have done a much better job. And yeah, so I'll just leave it there.
Thank you, Co-Chair Nathanson. Colleagues, I will be voting a very strong yes for this bill. I wish that we were simply sending this to the floor and then able to pass it and do this work here within the legislature. I understand there's a desire to send it to the ballot, and I will be doing everything that I can to help have this pass at the ballot. When I started in the House, two sessions ago, I passed the e-cigarette law, making it so that you had to be, at the time, 18, and now we've passed the tobacco 21 and over, and now we've raised this. And so I worked for a long time with former Representative Tomei on getting parameters around e-cigarettes. And then in prior to the 17th session, I led approximately a year-long work group about taxing e-cigarettes. And I really want to thank the governor's office and the, everyone else who was involved in coming up with the tax that's before us today. And this is, it has many of the elements that we have from this work group. So I do want to assure those who have been watching, there has been an enormous amount of attention to the details here, taking into consideration that it's a different product. E-cigarettes are different than regular cigarettes, and that this tax is designed in order to try to treat it as the same as much as possible. I said when we met yesterday, I have a son who just graduated from high school and a daughter who's going into high school, and I generally don't talk about my personal life from the dais, but I encourage anyone who does not normally go to a high school to go to one. And I know school's out, but just go ahead and go this fall, because let me tell you, teenagers are vaping like no one's business. And I see all the heads shaking because that's how it is. And I encourage you to talk to your principals and your teachers in your schools, because literally out of control. You can't smell it the same way. And so there's this whole like kind of getting away with it, different than when, at least when I was a kid, when I was younger, and I'm 52 now, so when I was younger, you know, you would have to like literally sneak it so you couldn't get caught. But now there's this whole other way that it can be consumed. Because I've been working on this issue for quite some time now, had a lot of doctors come in and out of my office. And what I always ask them, every doctor that I deal with, no matter whatever health issue we talk about, I say, hey, can I ask you a question about nicotine? And they say, sure, no problem. Is there one beneficial reason to have nicotine in society? The only thing it serves is as a poison. They don't use it for anything else. Now, I don't want to go around quoting doctors, but there is literally no purpose to having nicotine in society. So I don't know why we need to be crafting systems in order to enable people to continue to smoke when we know it only hurts the human body. So I'm going to be a yes. I hope it passes at the ballot. And I really want to thank everyone who's worked on this. And it's just actually too bad that it's taken such a long time to get to where we're at. And I hope we have more yes votes here on the committee as well. So thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
For your comments, any other discussion? Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to briefly say I will also be an enthusiastic yes for this, and I would appreciate the opportunity to vote on the other amendment as well, as I was asked. Thank you. I do want to say we had a lot of discussion in the House committee about, is this a revenue bill or is this a health, or is this a health bill? And I continue to say it is both. And to me, the public health benefit of decreasing smoking, particularly among young people, cannot be overstated. And if that works, and so the revenue is less, so much the better. In addition, I just wanted, with respect to the concern of leakage and getting to the same level as states around us, those of you who have been on the Revenue Committee, I'm sure will recall for a number of forecasts when our esteemed state economists would tell us how they were doing forecasts about lottery revenues going down because the big new casino was going to open in La Center, Washington. So the Island Eye was coming, and boy, they were expecting lottery revenues to drop on all those border locations into Oregon, and then it didn't happen. And so I would posit that in the same way I believe that idea about people flooding here to buy cigarettes, that'll go away, I believe that is a trope. I believe most of that research is funded by the tobacco industry, and I do not believe that is any more motivating than that concern about the lottery was and will turn out to be. So thank you.
Thank you. What's in front of us right now is the main motion to send the amended measure to the floor. Any other discussion? Objections? Representative Reschke, Senator Boquist, Representative Findley. Motion passes. Representative Smith Warner, without committee objection, is it all right if we ask Representative Smith Warner for her vote on the dash A15? You vote?
Yes.
Thank you. The carriers for House Bill 2270 will be Representative Salinas in the House and Senator Taylor.
Sure.
In the Senate.
Surprise.
Does that complete our work on 2270? I have no other notes. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2270. Opening a work session on House Bill 2130A.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2130A extends the sunset on four distinct property tax exemptions. It provides sunset for property tax exemption on land held by nonprofit for low-income housing to property tax year 2029. It extends the sunset property tax exemption for cargo containers to 2026. It extends the homestead property tax exemption for surviving spouses of fallen public safety officers to 2025, and there is a 130% cap on central assessment. Those are companies that have intangible property. That cap is extended, or that property tax exemption is extended to 2025. The revenue impact statement shows that until 2021, there's no revenue impact because those property tax exemptions will continue up through this biennium and then begin to sort of kick in the next biennium. And you can see that the largest impact is by the centrally assessed companies and their reduction in taxable and tangible value.
Thank you. Any questions for Legislative Revenue Office? Discussion. Yes, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. One of the things about being in the legislature is one has to learn that sometimes you get something and sometimes you don't. And sometimes you win and sometimes you don't. And unfortunately, our dairy folks are not going to on the next bill. On the next bill, but I'll share the comment now, and then I'll stay quiet on the next bill, are not included. I'm hoping that's something that in the future we can have greater discourse on. And while I did end up realizing it's on House Bill 2164, not 2130, the thought remains the same for the future. Thank you.
Any other discussion on 2130? Motion, please.
Yes. You don't have an amendment on it, so.
No amendment.
Madam Co-Chair, I move House Bill 2130 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate and the Oregon State House.
Thank you. Senator Haas moves House Bill 2130A to the floor with due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objections? Motion passes. You have to assign carriers. Do you have a carrier for the Senate?
This feels like a right.
I'll do it. No, I don't know.
Feels like a Riley can.
Senator Riley, will you carry in the Senate?
Sure.
Thank you. Representative Finley will carry this in the House. Another business on House Bill 2130A. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2130A. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2164.
What do you think with such a big diocese of people?
I think we need to step outside for a minute.
Madam Chair, could we stand at ease for a few minutes?
Yes, we will be at ease for a few minutes.
To ask, this is the two-tiered tax credit bill with the technical fixes to the Student Success Act and the tax credits, which have been somewhat modified. And we went through this one iteration last week. They've been updated to include, I think, Chris, if you could speak to the 23s and the 25s. And unless members object to go through mostly the changes that were made from last week. And that chart is an excellent chart to put up, if we can, the table.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and just for folks following and looking at all this, we have a number of documents that are intended to help stakeholders understand what's going on in the different amendments. So the first document I'm going to be referring to in OLIS under meeting materials has the title HB 2164-23 sections 1 to 49. That's the table that's on the screen right there. And basically the 23 amendment, the first half of the bill, is what has become known as the omnibus tax credits or tax expenditures, and the second half are the modifications and clarifications to the CAC. So the way the table is structured here is all of the language here provides the estimates and the tax expenditures that are in the amendment. Those items that are in red are what changed from the prior dash 11. So focusing on those changes, the earned income tax credit is increased by 1 percentage point. The base credit under current law is 8%. And if a taxpayer has a dependent under the age of 3, they get an 11% credit. That 8% and 11% is being increased to 9% and 12%. So that's a 1 percentage point increase in the EIC. Then the next change from prior is the political contributions credit. It's added to this amendment, and it has what we've termed here further means testing is that under current law, the eligibility to claim that credit is capped out at $100,000 or $200,000 for joint filers and $100,000 for all other filers. what this amendment does is it drops that $200,000 and $100,000 threshold to $150,000 for joint filers and $75,000 for all other filers. So that basically reduces the eligibility for the tax credit. So it costs a little bit less than a straight extension. And then the third piece in here under the property tax, the food processing equipment, this was the language that was in House Bill 2900A, one of the, I think that might have been the dash A4 amendments. And this is the property tax exemption for food processing equipment. It includes a city and county opt out. So those are the changes on this first half of the bill for the tax credit, tax expenditure piece. And we can see that the general fund revenue impact is $70.5 million for 1921, and then grows to $146 and $156. The property tax total impact is $1.2 million for the first biennium, and then that grows to $8.6 and $15.9. Most of that impact is from the food processing equipment. And then there is a gas and used fuel and weight mile exemption that's a fairly minimal impact, and it's those are for engines for testing emissions and or for emissions testing, and that impact is just $100,000 in the first biennium and then grows to about $150,000 a year.
Okay, any questions of our legislative revenue officer? I would like to say a couple things. I'm pleased that we can renew and expand the earned income tax credit even by just this little amount. And I especially, I want to say I appreciate the work by my representative Marsh and Finley on fine-tuning the food processing equipment tax incentive. Questions of Chris? Rep Finley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chris, I know this is because the dash 25, which is the IDA account, is not reflected in here. And I know we had a lot of discussion earlier about the IDAs and their levels. Is there a chart like this that reflects the IDA component of that?
There is, yeah, so just the dash 25s, under current law, the IDA contribution tax credit for contributions, the tax credit is 70% of that contribution. The dash 25 would increase that to 90%. And so we do have in OLS a revenue impact statement, House Bill 2164-25. And Kyle was just working on that, so I may ask Kyle to respond to that.
Oh, there it is. I'm sorry.
At least in the Legislative Revenue Office. And Co-Chair Haas, Rep Finley, we do have the revenue impact statement that's up on the screen for the IDA change. And again, the change for the IDA, it doesn't make any changes to that annual cap. There's a $7.5 million cap on the credit. And what we've seen from the numbers coming in so far this year, which is still pretty early for those, for individuals that are making contributions, it does look like they are coming in a bit below historical trend. So there is some expectation that if that were to continue, it may not hit that $7.5 million cap. Now, again, in the baseline revenue and economic forecast, it was expected to hit that $7.5 million cap. So the changes in the bill by moving it to 90% definitely give more options for an increased percentage to possibly reach that $7.5 million. But that's part of the reason for the indeterminate is really the baseline forecast already had that money spent, so to speak, in terms of this way. And then we'll see going forward whether the 90% is enough to really adjust people's behavior. But again, the data we have so far is still pretty early, where most of these donations do come in a lot of cases, near the end of the tax year. So we only have part of the year for 2019 in right now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions on the tax credits?
So what, yes. So the document I'll be referring to now is HB 2164 CAT sections dash 23 and dash 24. And the reason there is for the CAT language, it's identical in the dash 23 and dash 24. So the handout here, the plain language in the what's on the screen there are all of the changes in the amendment. And to highlight the changes from the dash 14 that the committee discussed last time, those are all the yellow highlighted parts. So I can just touch on, I can walk through those. Okay. So the first one in section 50, now the CAT in the amendment is sections 50 to 60. So just marching through those changes. On page 36 and 37, this is the definition from financial institutions and insurers. We deleted the phrase in addition to the definition in subparagraph A of this paragraph. That is simply, all that is doing is that we define commercial activity in subparagraph A, and then we define it for financials and insurers. We had language, we had those words in there, which was kind of it doubled up on the definition for financials and insurers, and they're meant to be separate definitions. So it's not in addition to the definition of the core definition of commercial activity. They have their own definitions. So we deleted that language. Then scrolling down to the circle bullets under the section that clarifies the items that are not commercial activity, I'm reading from the line that says sales transfers between vehicle dealers, including out-of-state dealers, on page 40, line 16. The base amendment had already precluded the transfer or sales of vehicles between dealerships when this is the case where somebody wants to buy a car from a dealership in Salem, but the car is only available in Portland, so the dealership sends it down. What we were missing from that was out-of-state dealers. So this language just says that this transfer between the dealerships could occur between, say, a dealership in Salem and a dealership in Vancouver, just to avoid any Interstate Commerce Clause problems. Then we deleted language that said rebates paid to purchasers by retailers or wholesalers. They were just raising a lot of questions, and this seemed to be a holdover from some of the Ohio language. So we deleted that. Then for the right-of-way fees and universal service charges for basically the utilities, there was a rewording of the section KK, just aligning that and calling out specific entities. Then the next change was part of the definition for governmental entity. The prior version had any public corporation, and that was changed to entities described in ORS 174.117. There were just some questions were coming about what was a public corporation, so that gets replaced by an ORS reference. And then in section 51, this is for property that is brought into the state, and this is meant to be kind of an anti-tax evasion, where if property is brought just on the other side of the border and then brought into the state in an effort to avoid the tax, that wouldn't be allowed. The language that got added in here is that it kind of equalized the ability of the taxpayer and the Department of Revenue to prove or show that it was not done for tax evasion purposes. The prior language had just said it was up to the DOR to make that determination. This language now says that the taxpayer can show that no, it wasn't for tax evasion purposes. Then in section 53, this is related to the 35% subtraction. We had the word receipts, and it's replaced by expenses, and this just has to do with intra, like a unitary group kind of situation. And so that word was changed. And section 54, along with the change in the streamlining of the definitions for financials and insurers, section 54 is the sourcing of commercial activity, and that language now is called out specifically for financials and insurers as opposed to being grouped in with all other entities. Section 55 is the local preemption, and this was just reordered so that it was an attempt to be as clear as possible that the preemption, this is the local preemption exemption, so the exemption from the local preemption applies to franchise fees, right-of-way fees, and any privilege taxes that are not structured exactly like the corporate activity tax. So other privilege taxes are allowed, but they just not if they're structured exactly like the one created here. Section 56, we added, clarified that these quarterly payments that are to be made are estimated payments. The taxpayers don't have to calculate the full liability at that time. They make quarterly estimated payments, and once a year at the end of the year, they'll file a return to true things up. And then in sections 57 to 59 is the biggest change, where this language excludes certain payments related to residential construction. And this is for general contractors who are building single-family residential. The portion of their payments to subcontractors that represent labor payments are an exclusion from the tax. The general contractor doesn't have to include them in their tax. And in the revenue impact statement for it, the estimated cost of this is just under $2 million a year, and it does have a six-year sunset.
Rep. Findlay.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I had issues with this in the dash 14 model because it was a pretty wide cone that it spread out there. This is much narrower. I still don't understand why we're doing this.
I'll respond. It was in the original tax bill and then taken out, and then put in the technical fix bill and then taken out. And then the goal was to not have a series of tax payments in the construction of one home, have it clean and simple. And we were surprised by how much that cost. We were really surprised, so we took it out. And then people on this committee and around the legislature said, given the housing crisis that we have, if we can skinny that up to $1 or $2 million, we should keep it in. So that's why it's here.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. But then why don't we clarify the language down if you're building low-income or multifamily housing or something like that? I mean, this is a home where I could build a $1 million house and qualify for this. I mean, that won't solve our housing crisis. I mean, if that's what we're after, then let's hone it down and fix it right, because this is, that's my own personal opinion. So, I mean, this won't fix the housing crisis. This won't aid in that much at all. So that's just my thought.
Rep. Smith Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. With all due respect, the housing crisis has nothing to do with the ability of contractors to build single family homes.
I would point out the revenue impact statement. So, in addition to that table there, the revenue impact statement for the dash 23 shows all of the policies and includes the impact for the subcontractor piece.
That's the bottom line on there.
Yeah, so let me explain a little bit. The policies there, that first block is pretty much the table that we walked through before, and you can see the total general fund impact there is minus 70.5. And then we have the property tax piece of minus 1.2, and then the vehicles used for testing emissions, and then the bottom line, the fund for student success, is that subcontractor piece. All of the other provisions that we walked through are clarifications or just streamlining the language. And there are a couple things that might have a revenue impact. There was the language around the ag co-ops and clarifying that it's farmer sales to ag co-ops. And then there was unrelated business income for certain exempt entities that they could have some impact, but they largely were trying to get at how the estimate was made anyway and the original intent of that language, particularly with the ag co-ops. We kind of found out midstream that some of the language that we had in there wasn't doing what we thought it was doing.
Well, thank you. And while I'm not disagreeing specifically, but we're carving out one very small sector, when if we're going to vote on carve-outs, I could have a different, much different list. I mean, such as agriculture or dairy or true low-income housing or old retired guys that drive all the way across the state to go to this
one. Take that thought. New amendment.
Especially the ones that were TCCA.
Let's make that not a whole lot of process. One of the questions is good, but.
Yes, Senator Boquist.
Thank you. Just for clarity, you touched the privilege tax.
You touched a raw nerve. The privilege tax is up there is not the privilege tax. We just won the court case over, right? The vehicle privilege tax.
Correct. Correct. Regarding, I think you're referring to the preemption language. I think that's where I mentioned that word. When we were looking at this, in the bill here, the corporate activity tax is described as the tax for doing privilege in the business of the state. And a lot of locals use different kinds of privilege taxes. So where we've been trying to find the right wording is that the other kinds of privilege taxes are not preempted. Okay. This particular one is.
Any other questions? Yes, Rep. Marsh.
Thank you. I just needed to clarify the fund for the impacts on the fund for student success. Is that entirely the single family home contractor, or is that something else as well?
That's just the contractor. The other pieces don't really have a revenue impact either. They were purely technical changes, or some of these that had a minor change, like the ag co-op, wouldn't change the estimate significantly. I mean, it's a pretty small change, and it really lined up with the intent of where we were trying to go with the original estimates. So that dollar impact, the 1.9, the 4, and the 4.5 is the subcontractor. And that estimate is how we got there was based on 20 census of construction data. The most recent census is 2012. They didn't do a 2017 census. So we relied on that data. And that got us the information for these labor payments. And then we grew that forward to 2020 through a combination of tax return data that we have from 2012 to 2016, as well as the baseline projections that were used in estimating 3427. And these overall payments, the estimate we had for 100% of those was in the neighborhood of around $12 million a year. But the subtraction or the exclusion that's called out in the bill is 15% of those payments. So that's how we got to the about $2 million a year. $2 million is about 15% of the $12 million. So it's residential. So for the exclusion, it has to be single-family residential construction, payments from a general contractor to a subcontractor, but only for the labor portion of those payments.
Questions?
Mr. Co-Chair, I don't have a question. First of all, I apologize that I needed to leave for a few minutes. As Representative Smith, also we were needed, there's another committee meeting down the hall in another hearing room. We had to go down there for a few minutes to participate in that discussion and vote. So I apologize for missing much of the conversation. I wanted to add a brief comment that when I look at this list, what I see is mostly a list of extending tax expenditures that were sunsetting. We did our job. We're reviewing what still works. Does it need amending or fixing in some way? We have extended a number of tax expenditures or tax credits that have been used for various purposes by different sectors and different geographic areas of the state. When I look at this list, I see things that impact primarily cities, see things that impact and benefit rural Oregonians as well as urban areas of Oregon. I see a really good mix of ways that we are trying to use our budget and our the various revenue instruments that we have to help benefit Oregonians in different ways. And it's always hard to figure out how to say no when you can't say yes to everything. And I'm very pleased at having a variety as wide as this to benefit different parts of the state.
Okay.
Are you ready for some motions?
23 and 25.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move the Dash 23 amendment adopted into House Bill 2164.
Co-Chair Nathanson moves the Dash 23s into House Bill 2164. Is there any discussion? Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Several thoughts. The first is I want to go back to my earlier comments when I misspoke during House Bill 2130. I think as co-chairs, you've done a fine and admirable job trying to find a balance between urban and rural and between other needs within the state. And so thank you for that. I would hope in the future that we could continue a public dialogue as it relates to the dairy credit, as I think all Oregonians genuinely benefit by keeping that industry sustainable. And while the dairy folks in my district are sustainable, I worry about really genuinely those folks on the coast who have to compete with the dairies in my district. And so the more we can support those coastal dairies, the more the industry as a whole survives. And so I'd raise that issue for us. The second issue that I'm concerned about, and one of the primary reasons I came to Salem, was making sure that we supported families. And I'm concerned with the political tax credit that we're going to be limiting certain organizations who could accept donations from all Oregonians from that ability to accept donations. And I would hope at a future time we could have additional public comment and discussion on that issue to make sure that all Oregonians have an opportunity to have the same tax benefit from use of that credit. I do want to point out how much I appreciate, as it relates to the chart in front of us there on the screen, your support of the food processing industry. For Representative Finley and for myself, that is absolutely critical to sustain the agricultural industry of Eastern Oregon. And I know some folks get a little uneasy about that once in a while, but thank you. And that's in addition to the crop donation and the agricultural workforce housing construction and the volunteer rural EMS. And I think I could go right down the line, to be candid with you, short line railroads, earned income tax credit. I think you've done a good job finding that balance. So thank you for letting me share those thoughts on this amendment and on the bill in its entirety.
Further discussion on the 823s.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I agree with Representative Smith. Madam Co-Chair, I believe, you know, that there's a lot of great things on this list. We have low-income rental housing under the property tax section, and we have agricultural workforce housing under the general fund section. I would feel much more comfortable with the fund for student success if it's theoretically geared toward housing, if it were more narrowly focused for low income housing and to provide, if we have a housing crisis, which we've said we do and we do, we should focus that more on that housing crisis, because there would be nothing to prevent a single family home of, you know, $500,000 to be built on that, and that does us no good. If we're going to do that carve out, I would much rather see it more keenly focused in on what we say is we have a housing crisis. This will help fix that. So, other than that, you've done an incredible job, and I appreciate your help. Thank you.
you. Rep. Marsh.
Thank you. Well, first, the tax credits. I think it is a good list of tax credits. You've done a great job at focusing on a variety of constituencies. I think the challenge for tax credits is that we are recognizing that we need more and more, expect more and more out of giving away tax credits. So our tolerance for expanding that is shrinking. And in the future, I expect that to continue as we really look for tax credits that have very specific missions and an ability to measure outcomes so that we can make sure, because a tax credit is a way of sharing revenue, essentially, that we are getting something of public value out of the issuance of tax credits. I do have to say, I'm going to have to swallow hard to accept that new addition to the construction or the corporate activities tax that is in regard to R1 construction. I agree with Rep. Finley that if I were giving a break to folks who are working on housing, it would not be with single-family homes. I think that's counter to everything else that we are doing in this session to try to spur a variety and a diversity of housing. And so that's one part of this package that is going to be difficult for me.
Thank you. Further discussion? Rep. Boquist.
I don't want to be discussion, but when it comes to voting, just make sure you mark me down as a no. That'll be pretty clear.
Further discussion? Rep. Smith.
Co-chair.
I have no idea.
I missed a key point on there, and I'd be remiss if I didn't bring it up. It was back in 2001 that then Representative Ben Westland and a group of folks came together and had this idea that they implemented called the Cultural Trust. And I think you were around, Senator, I can't, were you in the House at the time? Yeah, in the House. Senator Boquist, I believe, was around. And I just would be remiss if I didn't call out my good friend Ben Westland, who his vision has made a difference for the arts in Oregon. And so I just wanted to get that on the record.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I want to agree with Representative Smith on the political contribution, lowering the means test and my concern over that. And as we look to fight for campaign finance reform and figure out how to give voice more to the average voter, I think this takes a step backwards from that. And, you know, we exclude experienced teachers and firefighters and other professions that would have, if we would have kept it the same, would have benefited. And I also want to express my, I think, disappointment in not having the IDA change in this.
It's the next amendment.
Great. It happened.
I love this bill.
Part of it. All because of you.
That's not true, but I'll take it. And I want to appreciate the folks that worked hard on the earned income tax credit. I think 1% is a step in the right direction, and hopefully in future sessions we can continue to expand it. And I really want to appreciate the folks that really looked into the ITIN issue, and really getting down to the detail to see how we could potentially include that. And I know that a lot of families that are documented but may have an undocumented person in their family, and that person is seeking citizenship, has to file, and therefore they get left out from the earned income tax credit, and that's a lot of children that it impacts. So I hope we continue to work on it and figure out a solution to that in the future. But I really want to appreciate those that worked really hard for the earned income tax credit and expanding it. And I think that's a really important piece of legislation that helps, or a really important piece of the bill that helps low-income folks. So thank you.
Thank you. No further discussion. Are there any objections to adding the dash 23 amendment? Senator Boquist, Rep. Okay. Are you?
I'm objecting.
Yep.
To the amendment, correct?
To the amendment.
Noted. The amendment is adopted. Chair Nathanson.
Thank you. Mr. Co-Chair, I move the dash 25 amendment be adopted into House Bill 2164.
Nathanson moves the dash 25 amendment be adopted into HB 2164. This is the IDA amendment. We just had the briefing from Kyle.
Glad you brought that up. This is a good amendment.
Any discussion? Are there any objections to adding the dash 25? Seeing none, the dash 25 is amended.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Chair Nathanson.
I move House Bill 2164 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Nathanson moves House Bill 2164 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate and the Oregon House with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Rep. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Colleagues in public, today will be a yes vote on this. I would share with those who are new to politics that when you find common ground, that's not selling out. When you're able to reach a synergy with folks who perhaps don't share the same opinion with you, that's not trading your vote. That's finding a way to make Oregon work. And there's pieces of this legislation that I scratch my head over and wonder why in the world are we doing this? And then I look up and reiterate the comments I shared earlier that there's things in here that really are supportive of rural Oregon. And so Mr. and Mrs. Co-Chair, Ms. Co-Chair, I would share with you, I think you've done a good job finding common ground and creating a synergy that Oregonians can be proud of. And I'll be voting yes.
Further discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm going to be a yes on the full amended bill. I don't like the fact that we're fixing House Bill 3427 in the same session. I think we should have spent our time fixing 3427 because that bill had to have a higher threshold than this fix does. So I don't like that part. But I don't get to play king here. I am one out of many. And as far as all of this goes, there are things I like and things I don't like, but I'll be a yes on the full omnibus.
Thank you. Let me just say that I very much appreciate the work that's gone into this and your sincere comments. To me, sometimes I'm guilty of burying the lead and telling stories. I'll try not to do this here. The lead to me is the earned income tax credit. It's 5/7. It's 50 million out of 7 million on this tax credit. And this was a lot of people nervous that we weren't going to be able to renew this very important tax credit in our state. And we not only renewed it, we bumped it a little bit, and maybe next time we can go further. There's indisputable documentation on the benefits the earned income tax credit plays in the lives of our low-income working Oregonians. So that to me was very important. The political tax contribution is tricky. We have some people in our chamber who don't think we should do it, any of it. Not that they don't like it, but that there are more important priorities. And so by skinning it a little bit, we were able to add a point to the earned income tax credit, as well as add in the short line railroad tax credit that I know is important to rural Oregonians. So it's a balance, and we were allowed $70 million. We got to 70.5. Don't tell the co-chairs about that 0.5. Maybe they won't find out, but I think we did our job pretty well here. So I applaud all of you. So with that, clerk will call the roll.
Mayor Bobus.
No.
Rep. Hernandez.
Aye.
Rep. Reschke.
Aye.
Senator Riley.
Aye.
Rep. Smith.
Yes.
Rep. Smith Warner. Senator Taylor.
Aye.
Co Vice Chair Finley.
No.
Co Vice Chair Marsh.
Yes.
Co Chair Haas.
Aye.
Co Chair Nathan.
Aye.
It's a courtesy vote.
And Representative Smith Warner is excused. She is scheduled to be somewhere else.
Measure.
Multifamily housing.
Did it pass?
Yeah.
On the House, yeah.
Yeah.
As amended, moves to the Oregon House floor and the Oregon Senate floor. Rep. Nathanson, will you be the carrier? I'll be the carrier in the Senate. That concludes all of our work on the Tax Expenditures Committee. I thank you, fellow revenuers. I thank you for this line of work you've chosen here in these committees. And we will adjourn.
Did we choose this?